Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. It's Ryan Henning with Kyle Bloom, getting ready to host our latest and greatest, our first ever episode of Rhino and Compass Radio. For those of you who don't know, Kyle Bloom, you actually have seen him before. He was part of the 30-team photo series from the All-Star Game. So, Kyle, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
All right, well, the plan today is to maybe discuss football first with NFL playoffs, college football playoffs, and everything coming up this weekend, and then probably close it out with the Twins offseason in particular, maybe touch on some of the other teams. We're going to be live on Blog Talk Radio for about a half an hour. You're actually listening and would like to call in at 347-857-3663. But otherwise, if we go over the half hour, we'll be posting via podcast link online. And, excuse me. We have a Twitter up, but they just post something that's making us chuckle, and it is definitely not something that can be repeated. But what I was trying to say is if you want to listen to the full episode after the half hour is up, we'll be posting this online, and I'll be linking to it from the site perhaps this evening or sometime tomorrow. So with that, we'll take things or take it away. Kyle is actually in studio. It's a little different setup than we had last time when we had our various co-hosts. And Kyle is actually going to be flying home today as I'm driving in. And I have a perfect segue going to Green Bay to start talking about football and the Packers. But, Kyle, I know you're just there. What is it like to be there right now? Is it just awful?
Yes. It's very, very cold, very snowy. I didn't think I was going to make it home yesterday. Blizzard-like conditions in the middle of the day. But luckily, I was able to make it back. It didn't seem like Thomas particularly hopped his cat for the football game, so I'm scared arriving.
I imagine, though, that Green Bay has never particularly hopped.
No, it absolutely not.
I think most of the fans are at Milwaukee, but I know that it's supposed to be about, you know, zero, negative five, maybe with serious wind chill at game time, and it's going to be kind of like the Ice Bowl from 60s. 70s between the Packers and Cowboys, which is actually what this game this weekend is going to be. I think this day and age, a lot of games come down to who has better passing attack, better defense, but the temperatures are like 5, 10 below, and the wind chill is around negative 30. But you have to believe it comes back a little bit to the ground game, especially when Aaron Rodgers is currently nursing a sore half, and I'm not sure how that's going to affect his passing game. So I think it's going to come down to Marco Murray versus Eddie Lacy and who has the better run defense. Yes, Eddie?
No, I really don't have anything to turn around, unfortunately.
Well, that's fine. But if you're going to twist my arm and make me come up with a prediction on who's going to win the first NFC divisional playoff game, I would have to lean towards the Packers, just because they're at home, and I don't think the Cowboys are going to be very good when it's that cold, especially three playing indoors when they're a little bit more manageable.
Right, I'm not the biggest football fan in the world, but I agree with that. I think Packers definitely have the advantage playing in the cold, snowy weather. I can't write a salad. Ready for that.
Yeah. And then the winner of that game will be squaring off against the winner of the Seahawks and Panthers. I don't think there's much to say about that game. Panthers were able to win the game. And the Seahawks won the Super Bowl last year by about 100 points. It's in Seattle. Even though the Panthers are playing a little bit better, I don't believe that the Panthers are definitely have much of a chance against Seattle this week. So that would set up the Seahawks versus the Packers in a week. So we'll see how that goes. And then on the AFC side, there's the Patriots versus the Ravens in New England. I think there's a better chance for the Patriots to lose against the Ravens than I do the Patriots losing to either the Colts or Broncos next week. Have you caught any AFC football this season?
I have not.
He's going to be more.
I'll be more helpful in baseball or basketball.
I think the Ravens have the experience of playing in the postseason, and they do have a little bit of youth on their side. I think the Patriots realize that this is probably their last or one of their last chances to really compete. Tom Brady is about 37, 38 years old. His shelf life is pretty much expired, just like the Broncos in Denver and Peyton Manning. So I just have had this feeling all season Patriots year, so perhaps I'll be wrong in the Ravens win, but I'm still sticking with the Patriots, and if they can get by the Ravens, I don't think there's anything stopping them from getting Phoenix in 3 weeks either. But the question would be who they're going to be competing against, and that's where my Colts come into play. The Colts are playing against their former quarterback in Denver. The Colts and Broncos played in the season opener, also in Denver, and it was not pretty. Denver looked like the team that was going to be the Super Bowl contender from the AFC again. And I really have no reason to think that's a chance, as much as the candy to say it. They are dealing with too many injuries on defense, and what defense they do have wasn't very good to begin with. So I don't see how the Broncos are even going to be slowed down by the Colts. I could see Indy scoring maybe 28, 30 points and still losing by 20 in Denver against a Broncos team that's desperate to get back to the Super Bowl and maximize on their short time with Nick Manning. So that's pretty boring, but I think I picked all the home teams for next week. I think if there's one team that's going to lose at home, it might be the Packers, just because of Marco Murray and Aaron Rodgers' injury. I suppose we'll see how long that in a couple weeks.
And I have expressed interest in the Cowboys are better away than they are at home. They're 8-0 away this year, whereas they were 4-4 at home. So that could bode well for them, both ways for the Packers, but you never know.
Really agree
about that.
That's right. That's not the only football being played in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to make sure Sal doesn't have much to say for another 5 minutes. The other big game, this is actually coming up later in the week, is the national final game for college football, and that's kind of a surprise matchup. I think everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people on TV were expecting to see a match between Alabama and undefeated Florida State, and neither of those teams made it to the national title game. Instead, it's going to be Oregon versus Ohio State. I think the bigger surprise is that Ohio State made it. They're on their third-string quarterback, and they absolutely manhandled Alabama. I'm not so surprised about Oregon. They struggle a little bit in the Pac-12, but they also have the pedigree. They've been to the national title within the last few years, and they played a Florida State team that really hadn't been as strong as their record might have indicated. They played a lot of close games in the ACC, and the ACC was a great conference. It might have been better than we thought, especially looking at Georgia Tech's performance in they play the Orange Bowl in state. It seems like an unusual matchup, but I think it's not as surprising as at least to see Oregon in the final game as we had thought. On the other hand, I'm a Big Ten fan, and I watch the Big Ten. I'm a Big Ten supporter. I'm still surprised Ohio State made it. It seems like the last 10 years or so, anytime Big Ten has had to play against the SEC, ended poorly for the Big Ten. And not just poorly, but also embarrassingly. So I think the only time that I started to believe that Ohio State had a chance against Alabama was after watching some of those games with the other SEC West teams, like Mississippi and Mississippi State, losing and losing badly in their bowl games. Auburn also lost. It just wasn't a good time for the SEC West. So that was kind of what made me think, you know, maybe it's not going to be so bad. Maybe Ohio State can at least run with Alabama. And it turns out they helped them win the game. So they deserve it. I think Oregon destroying Florida State is more indicative of how national title game is going to go. I think Oregon is probably better at this point in the season than Alabama was, and I think it's a tougher game for Ohio State than for the Bengals.
Actually, somewhat surprised to see the line. I know it said Oregon favored by six. That was higher given there, laying that bringing off Florida State.
Yeah, just their general reputation of putting points on the board.
Well, the over instead of best five, so everyone's expecting to shootout.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that is just a lot smaller. You're right. I think if there, one team's going to get to 30, that's probably like 45. You still get your over 100, but I don't think it would be
like the first place spread.
That's right.
Well,
yeah,
thanks to keep up.
Thanks. I lost my train of thought. That's kind of where I was going with it. But so those are officially my predictions for football and weekend. I'm going to go Green Bay versus Seattle in the NFC playoffs, New England and Denver, the AFC, and then the national title. I don't see how Oregon's going to lose. And I think the spread, like Kyle mentioned, is a little too narrow. I'll give them 45 to 30 about.
So I think that sounds pretty good.
So that would be the football portion of the film. I think we've covered all we need to cover. So the real reason we're here, I think, is to talk about the Twins, talk about what they've done this offseason, where they might go from this point forward. So we'll take a look back at what they've done so far this offseason and what it might be and what there's still left to do. The biggest move the Twins made this offseason was signing starting pitcher Urban Santana. I've made it pretty clear my opinion on the Santana signing in that I'm not 100% convinced that it's as great as some people think it is. I think they're paying well, end up with the same kind of pitcher that they had with Ricky Nolasco. What are your thoughts on
that? I agree with that. I mean, I think that Twins fans are just excited that they're going to have a solid pitcher in the rotation, which is something that has been sorely lacking for several years. Like, he's not going to be a star. You know, he's not going to be an ace. He's not going to be a top pitcher. And if he was on a playoff team, he'd probably be a 4 or 5. Unfortunately, on the Twins, a 4 or 5 on a playoff team is a 1 or 2 on the Twins.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just, I'm not a huge fan of resigning. I mean, I'm glad that they're going for people who have some longevity consistency, so at least there's somebody who takes the pressure off the bullpen. But people who are expecting him to be like saving grace to the rotation, I don't know what to tell. Like, I think they're going to be thoroughly disappointed.
Yeah. I think Santana's last couple of years will take him for 2. He might have used this year. But by the end of the season, this has kind of been my opinion and what I've been saying the whole time. He and Ricky West are going to have very
I agree.
Velasquez is going to be a little bit better this year, but if you sign somebody like Urban Santana to a $54 million contract next offseason, you would get rid of him because that's nearly what they've done the last couple of years, especially considering he was in the A for NL last year. I think the real issues, the deeper issues, especially somebody to look at to see if it's doing it right, you know, their own division, is the outfield defense. The infield defense, also not very good, but the outfield defense is perfect. I think more money could have been invested out there and been invested more intelligently than signing other offseason acquisitions.
Okay, sorry then, Torrey Leonard.
Well, we've got time to talk out, so I'm going to get you started.
I'm not a fan of the signing at all. I mean, I don't know how you can make our outfield defense worse, but somehow we went up to it. They brought back somebody who, you know, is performing all right from the batting standpoint. Someone really didn't need a bat. They've got a lot of slow bats who can't really play defense on the team. Wait, Vargas and Pinto. Guys who sort of have positions, and not really. I think it's adding Hunter is going to hurt him more than it's going to help him. Plus, I'm just not a big fan of his off-field persona at all either. So the only thing I'm excited about is that our season ticket seats are going to be behind on Walmart, and that's pretty exciting this year. So that's the only thing I think to look forward to. It's very exciting. Not very happy with that.
I get the feeling that signing 400 specifically was done for two reasons, and they're not exactly baseball reasons. Not.
I would agree with that.
And the first one is that he was popular in his first run here, and he went for cash for $12 million a year to go to Anaheim, which, by the way, that's because of how inflation is running rampant baseball heads. In the prime of his career, he got a $12 million contract. Now that he's 39 years old, he's still got a $10 million contract. Yeah, he was popular, and the Twins fans were disappointed when he left. So I think getting a fan favorite back in the stadium might drive ticket sales. And then the other reason is that the Twins know that they're going to have to pay a premium to sign anybody, and 4,800 wasn't going to make them pay that premium. So they got something they could afford with the added benefit of putting plus this season, which I think Twins are resigned to the fact it's not going to be a winning season. They're still waiting for Miguel Sano's and Byron Buxton's world to show up. So from that perspective, it's all right. I still would have preferred the Twins sign anybody but Torrey Hunter, who was probably the worst defensive outfielder in the free agent class this year. And he is slightly better than Josh Bellingham, but not much. And he'll get on base more than Bellingham did, but he won't hit for his power. I don't know. He is better than Bellingham was last year, but not enough to get a thing.
No, and I really think that, like I said, the crossing will play is kind of put plus and see for the terrible year we're going to have ahead of us. And he won't stop anybody from playing. He's not going to plug, you know, they didn't have to give 2 or 3 years to somebody else to get up the sign here. Yeah, they probably overpaid for it quite a bit, but, I mean, he's not going to stop those guys in the minor leagues from coming up. He's not going to plug any holes. He's just going to be here to maybe put some extra people on the seat before we get to next year, but maybe they can start to compete at least.
Right. I think that's exactly the long-term thinking. It's hard to frame a 1-year contract for a long-term thinking, but I think that's just what we're doing with a signer. And I don't think it's going to be a terrible season this year. They're not going to be running up AAA pitchers every third start like they have been recently. And they do have a very good offense, actually, by pretty much any measure. They've got a decent bullpen. It's just that they don't have a top-end starter, unless they'll be officially last year. And they maybe don't have out-of-the-order on-base guys like they might want. But I think they're still going to win 2 or 3 more games than they did last year, which would put them below 500, but still at about 73, 74 wins, which is middling. It's not terrible anymore. And at least the Swiss have improved every year since Barry Ryan took the Charge again.
I would probably agree with Philly if they were in the same AL Central as last year, but the other teams had tried to improve. Like the White Sox, I don't know what they're doing, but they kind of went ham and to try to improve, and it might not work out for them, but I think that all the other teams are at least trying to improve. The other Royals do their inexplicable World Series run last year to make it there. I don't know if they necessarily got better, but I don't think that they necessarily got any worse than they were.
Unless they don't replace the field, which case.
Right, that's the biggest thing. But the Indians were better last year. They're going to be better next year, I believe. The family have the same manager place for them. For a year and a half now.
Okay.
The Tigers are probably going to go all in because they're getting old. The owner is getting old, wants the championship. So if anybody's going to start doing deadline trades to massively inflate their payroll to get them there, it's going to be the Tigers. So I just don't see the Twins winning any more than last year. I don't see them losing any more than they did last year, but I don't see them being that much better. Like I said, maybe a couple wins max, but
right.
I can see them being a couple, maybe having a couple fewer wins just because of the slightly elevated competition.
Right, and that's a good point. But also it's been lamented by Verlander for all the time how few games they play within their division. So I think that's going to work for their advantage. Is it going to play the Texas Rangers who aren't good? I don't think the Royals are going to be any results for them from last year.
I would agree with that. Just from a progressive standpoint, like they were the type of team that shouldn't have made it to the World Series, but they did.
Yeah.
I don't see them repeating that same sort of magic that they had. They're not a team that's built for the World Series. At least not a traditional team.
Right.
World
Series. Right. And I think their entire team was contingent on pitching. And I don't think they're going to have the same level that they did last year, especially without Shields. Because now we really have Jeremy Guthrie.
They didn't lose anybody from their bullpen, though, did they? At least the main four or five guys from the bullpen.
Yeah, they traded Aaron Crow to the Marlins.
But I'd say that those back three bullpen guys are probably more important than losing a starter. Granted, it might end up being horse feast, but I think that the seven, eight, nine innings that feast and teams going into the Royals knowing we have to be up after the sixth inning, because we're not going to come back in the seventh, eighth, ninth. Granted, having a good starter like James Shields to make sure that they're not losing going into the sixth is pretty important. But at the same time, how many starts does an average starting pitcher make?
About 30.
30? So, that's 30 games that they got to figure out. I don't think that's the end of the world. I don't like it that. I don't think they'll go to the World Series again next year. I don't think they'll be that good. I don't even know if they'll. I don't even think they'll have to win the division. But, so, the.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be terrible, certainly, but there's such a fine line in baseball. The Twins, let's build it around it. Let's say the Royals won 75% of the games when they were starting Shields last year. They only won 50% in those same 32 game stretch where a different number one starter, they're going to lose.
They wouldn't make the playoffs.
Yeah. Right, there's going to be four or five.
Sure.
If the Twins, I think we're both kind of projecting to hold about 17, 73 games.
That sounds fun.
And if they win three, four, or extra four or five games next year, then they're almost a 500 team. And the whole album is different. So I think it can really affect it. And another thing is, like, if you're – I'm not saying that James Shields is going to win you an extra – four or five games myself. But if you can save the bullpen a little bit by going deeper, and I think that's one of the other big things that the Twins wanted with Irvin Santana, to spare the bullpen a little bit.
And I think that's going to be extremely important, the Santana's value.
Mm-hmm.
If he puts up a four, and if he manages to keep his ERA under four, I'll be ecstatic. But if he puts up a four and a half ERA, but manages to go into the seventh inning in 85-90% of the start, I think it'll be a success. I think that'll end up being a successful sign. As long as the ERA doesn't start pushing up over that 5 mark.
Right.
That's
and
when things will get a little hairy.
And that's kind of what happened in the last year. He kind of turned it around 13 years.
Right.
And that's kind of why I think
and that might, I mean, that in and of itself, if you got those two guys and Phil Hughes going seven innings every game, that's going to take a huge amount of pressure off the bullpen. And the Twins have traditionally had a very strong bullpen, especially when they have those starters that can take pressure off
right,
the
bullpen. Right.
So if you've got the bullpen only pitching eighth and ninth innings, 90 games, you know, 80, let's say 75 games a year that the bullpen doesn't have to come out until after the seventh inning,
yeah.
That's going to help.
Exactly.
That should help a lot just by itself.
Exactly. And then that's where I go back to the Royals, that I would be concerned if you're not going to have the same durable starter like you did with Shields next
right.
year, then that's going to put an extra strain on the bullpen, and that's going to hurt starts where Shields is hitting.
And that big three is great, but how is that big three going to perform if they
right.
have to pitch 90 or 100
right.
games?
And another thing is the bullpen is such a volatile opponent that it's really difficult to have it repeat the same success year over year. So I think in the end, I'm not as sold on the Royals being as competitive next year, and I think that's going to help. I'm not as high on the Indians either as you might be that back for a Kluber, but other than that, there's not a lot there that I'm particularly worried about.
I just see them just, I mean, they didn't really add anyone especially impactful, but I see them, who they have, just getting a little bit better.
That's fair.
I don't think they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to be competitive for the Central by any means. But I think that it's going to be the Indians and the Twins kind of battling for the bottom of the Central. And I don't know if the Twins get. I mean, maybe if Nolasco manages to get a little bit of a spark back from his seasons in the NL, if he and Santana can stay consistent, or maybe they.
How much of the season do you think is going to depend on how many of the prospects reach this year?
Honestly, I don't think much of it is going to. It'll improve the outfield defense, which, who knows, maybe just bringing up Buxton and putting Torrey Hunter on the bench and which is not going to happen, unfortunately, but, maybe bringing up Sano, being able to move Hicks over to right, Buxton, putting him in center, if that improves the outfield defense significantly, that could be huge. But at the same time, I don't think their bats are going to add all that much because the Twins have bats. Like, they got guys who can hit. They got guys who have been successful. Sometimes we don't have, like, a huge regression. So, Dave Santana, as long as Vargas keeps up at least a little bit of, I mean, Vargas is the one I'm more worried about than Santana for regressing because he was never at AAA. So that concerns me maybe a little bit more than David Santana, but I don't think their bats are going to make that big difference. I think it's all field
defense. Yep, I agree. And we're going to continue this discussion on the podcast version. We're about out of time for the live show, so we'll wrap this up and then we'll get to do the discussion after a quick break.